Hi, I'm Michelle Sawatsky-Coop, and I'm always excited to share another episode of Heroes in Our Midst with you. But today is extra special. Today, our guest is Claire Hanna. Most recently, she was on the sidelines reporting for TSN and their coverage of the 2023 Grey Cup Championship game. Claire was also a three-time national champion with the UBC women's volleyball team, a member of the Canadian senior women's volleyball team, and so many other highlights along the way. Now, with all of these incredible experiences, you might think that Claire is a really lucky lady. Well, luck would be the last word I would use to describe her journey. My goodness. Words like persistence, determination, hard work, reps, never giving up, and being present and available would be much more fitting. But you will hear that for yourself. And once you hear her story, you will be thankful that you found your way here. And like any story, it starts at the beginning.
I don't know if kids do this anymore, but I was the kind of kid who was doing as many clubs and sports as I could. I was on the swim team when I was in grade three. I would, you know, at school, join every team possible, whether that was cross country running, whether that was basketball, whether that was volleyball. Like, volleyball is actually a little bit of a later stage sport because I think you have to be pretty strong to handle the ball and stuff. So I didn't really start getting into volleyball until truly like grade eight or nine. But did everything I possibly could. And when I reflect on why, I think it's because I just had friends who were also active and I wanted to spend as much time as I could with them. And so, you know, it's instead of just going over to their house to play with, you know, dolls or play in the backyard or whatever, I'm like, okay, we can be on a team together and doing drills and whatever. So I loved it.
Like you say, those friendship groups, those relationships, and obviously it led you into sport, but what got you into volleyball? What inspired you to go that path?
Well, in grade seven, I just tried out for the school team, like all my friends did, but I have to credit, I was a big badminton player. And actually I'd just been competing in the like national championships for U16 in Winnipeg, Michelle, I think it was, what's the one downtown close to Confusion Corner? It's like a club.
Oh, like the Winnipeg Winter Club or something?
Yeah, the Winter Club. That's it. Yes. So that's where nationals were. So anyways, I was competing there and I was flying home and it had been a busy week. And my two best girlfriends, Alex and Marin, this is in the time before cell phones and email. And I got off the plane in Calgary and my dad was picking me up and he's like, hey, Claire, Marin and Alex are going to do this club tryout for volleyball and they really want you to come along. And they packed spandex and shirts and everything, like your shoes for you. So all you have to do is show up at the like Calgary Jack Simpson Gymnasium for the tryouts and they have it all for you. Like, that's like how good are friends, right? We're
so
grade
cool.
Eight, or I think we're in grade nine. And so I just showed up and they were like, Claire, what's up? We're going to try out for this club team. And I didn't even know what that was. And if it hadn't been for them, like, I don't know where my story would be because you couldn't just miss the first day of tryouts. So yeah, I got off the plane and went straight to these tryouts. And then I think like we all made a team, but I was on a team with Marin, but Alex made a different team, but it didn't matter because we're all in the same club. And that was it. And then, you know, you play club and you just keep going. And sometimes you make provincial teams. Sometimes you get caught or cut. But that was the beginning of like volleyball becoming a real passion for me.
Yeah, that's amazing. That is so funny. They just brought your stuff, actually.
Yeah. Well, because at the time when we played volleyball for our school team in junior high, like this doesn't really matter, but we would just wear basketball shorts and like baggy t-shirts. And so for this club tryout, they were so dialed and I don't know why they were dialed in and I wasn't, but they were like, okay, it's cool to wear spandex. So we brought you an extra pair of spandex and it was like Marin's mom's spandex shorts for biking or something. And I'm like, I never worn spandex. And if you remember as a, like a 13-year-old girl, wearing spandex is kind of intimidating because you're like, butts just all out there and all
totally.
This stuff and like you're we're getting into it, but like your underwear lines are showing and whatever, and so it's kind of you're self-conscious. And I was like, really? And they're like, Claire, if we want to make the good teams, like we have to look the part, so wear these spandex. I'm like, okay. But yeah, they brought it all for me. It was so cool.
I just love that. So right away you sort of had a leg up, you had a support team there and all that, and And so off you were playing volleyball at the club level, of course. And that's what it takes these days, you know, play that club volleyball, get to those national championships and all that stuff. And now you played all sorts of sports. When did the other sports at one point drop off and you really started to focus? And was there a time where you really realized, oh, I'm actually pretty good at volleyball?
So I mentioned that I'd just been to badminton national championships for my age group, U16. And I remember it was pretty, like, I wanted to keep trying both paths. So club volleyball and badminton, but there gets to be a point where one, there's a lot of volleyball tournaments on a weekend. And then there's also badminton tournaments. And also with practices too, like I was practicing a lot in badminton, but then there'd be team practices for volleyball, which you can't miss. And I remember at one point, one of my badminton coaches was like, hey, Claire, like you're taking a spot in badminton practice from somebody and you're not here that often anymore. And so we think you've got to kind of choose, because if you're not going to be here, we want to give it to somebody else. And it was actually a pretty high performance badminton training squad. Here's another, I'm like, I don't know. You've got my memory going here, Michelle, but my parents had been to this like college recruitment, like dinner or something with a bunch of other friends where they were looking into scholarships and how you could get your kids scholarships. And they had a list of all the scholarships offered, I think in North America, but honestly, I think it was just in the United States. It was like, there was something like 2000 scholarships offered for volleyball players. And there were 3 for badminton. And, you know, and then they were like, and there's, look at how many there are for a water polo and like sports I didn't do, but they by no means were pressuring me to play volleyball, but they just showed me this information. And at the time I was smart enough to think, well, if so many exist for volleyball, that's because there's way more avenues and going to be way more of a future in volleyball than there would be for badminton. And also I loved playing with my friends, and badminton was a very solo sport. So that was those two things factored in. And then I just started really enjoying volleyball. And then the first time I was asked to try out for the Alberta provincial team, I think I was 15. It wasn't the senior provincial team. It was like the junior one or whatever. I tried out and I made it. And I think that was just, I'm like, okay, let's like give her, you know, I just do some extra workouts because I started realizing that I might have a future in this. And maybe like you, Michelle, I've grown up watching a lot of the Olympics and I can almost like figure out main life events in my youth based on Olympics. I'm like, oh yeah, Silken Lawman, she was rowing in 92 or 94 or whatever. So I'm like, that one, or Donovan Bailey winning the gold in 96. Like I remember these years and I always wanted to be an Olympian. And I thought, okay, volleyball, maybe that's where I can be an Olympian.
Well, that's a good drawing card because that's super exciting to watch people be that excellent at something, right? No matter what the sport is, for sure. So club goes, you make this provincial team, and obviously you're getting into the upper echelon in Alberta volleyball and all of that. Did universities come calling for you, or how did that path end up turning that way?
Well, in grade 11, I think you start looking at universities, grade 11, grade 12. And I'd never made provincial team as an underager. I'd always made it for the main age. But there's a couple athletes who are, you know, above and beyond. And so they're a year younger than everybody else. And I was really trying to make it in grade 11 for the grade 12 provincial team. And I got cut and I was really choked, because that's where a lot of universities would kind of start recruiting, because they'd be looking at who are the really talented grade 11s that are making the team. That didn't prevent me from doing anything, but I was reaching out to a lot of coaches. And my high school volleyball coach, not club, his name's Karsten Stanjak. He actually was an assistant coach with the University of Alberta Pandas with Lori Eisler. So I could be like, hey, can I talk to Lori through you? You know, like, she came and watched a game of mine in high school and she was like, you know, like you're okay. I might have you on the practice team, but I wouldn't be recruiting you heavily, but like not saying there wouldn't be a spot for you. And that was really my answer from a lot of coaches. I knew Diane Scott pretty well from some of the camps I'd attended, and she was recruiting me. I'd say not heavily, but she was like, yeah, there would be a spot for you on my team with the University of Winnipeg. And then Doug Reimer with UBC, like I knew, Michelle, that I wanted to go to UBC. I was born in Vancouver, but my family had moved to Calgary. So I had this desire to kind of go back to my original home. The volleyball team was incredibly strong. The academics of UBC were really high. So for me, UBC was really checking all the boxes. But Doug also was kind of like, like, you're okay, but you're not great. So I eventually wore Doug down to the point where he's like, you can come and try out. And I'll guarantee you like a red shirt position, which means you're sort of an extra player on the team, but you probably won't travel. But he's like, that's all I'm guaranteeing you. He's like, maybe you blow my mind and make the team. But yeah. So, and I don't even know if he knew who his 12 were going to be in that recruiting class. Like he kind of made almost open-ended promises to a couple players, but we're like, okay, whatever. Like we're still going to be part of the team. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll take it. Right. We'll take what we can get. Yeah, totally. I love your persistence and like wearing him down. Now, what year was this that we're talking about? Like, when did you graduate and were you a libero at the time?
Okay, so I graduated high school in 2004 and it was in my grade 12 year, so 2003, 2004, that I was actually at the time a middle blocker. And then sometimes I was getting like my club team sort of switched me to an outside hitter because they were really great in recognizing I probably wasn't tall enough and jumping high enough for a middle blocker. Mm-hmm. So they're like, let's shift you to power and make sure you can pass as well. So that was cool. But I remember in December of my grade 12 year, my mom actually worked for the airlines. So we had really, it wasn't a financial issue for us to fly around last minute because we could do standby.
Nice.
And so we flew out to Vancouver from Calgary so I could do a little bit of a tryout with Doug and he could see what I was like in a December practice. So that was big because then at least he could get to know me. But yeah, I didn't play libero at all actually until like third year university.
Wow. That's incredible actually. So
it's wild.
Yeah, that is wild because you were mostly an outside hitter then. So, yeah. Right. And how tall are you?
I'm like 6 feet mm-hmm. in the morning. Like I'm 5'11 and a half, but we're going to just say 6 feet.
6 feet in the morning. You know what? I've never used that as short as I am. And I would use a millimeter to be taller than I am. I never thought of that. That's really, really good. 6 feet in the morning. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you get onto this team. So you get on, so you persist. You get him to give you a tryout. You know, he's sort of, you know, I love this though. I think it's great for people to hear, you know, when people who have done substantial things in sport as you have, and we're going to get to that yet. But you were invited into the sport at that level in a very lukewarm way. And I think that's good for people to hear. They were honest with you. They told you what they thought and you had to decide if you wanted to walk into those waters. And did you really go in thinking I am going to prove to them that I can actually do this?
100%. And honestly, Michelle, I was a good volleyball player in high school. Like I made the provincial team in grade 12. I just didn't make it as an underager. Like I was right in there. Mm-hmm. And I was confident too in my ability. And I knew that I worked hard and I'm like, well, I'm just going to go in there and make myself get a spot on the team. But so my first year I ended up being a redshirt, which meant I never traveled. I think he took me on the trip to Calgary because that's where my family was and was like, you can just like come along and do stats or whatever. So I didn't dress or anything, but it was really cool of Doug to let me, you know, take part on that trip. But yeah, my first year was sort of as expected, but then entering my second year, like I worked so hard in the summer between my first and second year of university, because one of the criticisms was I wasn't strong enough. I didn't jump high enough. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to make sure that those are not going to be faults that get me cut in my second year. So spent a lot of time in the gym that summer, just trying to, you know, not bulk up, but get quick and fast and jump high. And then in my second year, there was like 19 people on our volleyball team because he'd still recruited players, but we had not graduated anybody from first to second year. So all of our starters were in their fourth year with like one second year player. But now in my second year, everybody's just in their fifth year. So he's got a bigger team because he's Doug Reimer's planning for all of these people who are about to graduate. And he needs to make sure yeah, he's prepared. And so about 2 months in, and this is where, like, it was a really tough start for me, because when you are practicing, it's 6-on-6, right? So that's 12 players, but then there's 6 on the side. Like, I wasn't getting into any drills. I wasn't doing anything. And Michelle, this is where you come in, because I had heard you guest speak in my grade 12 year and my grade 10 year. Mm-hmm. And you had talked about how when you were at practice not getting into drills, you'd just go on the side and you'd set to the wall and you just give her and just get your own reps in. Well, when I was on the side not getting into these drills, I was like, okay, screw it. Give me a ball. I'm going to go to the side. And I would just pass against the wall, really intense ball control drills. I'd set against the wall. I'd pull one of the players who was on the side and I'd be like, let's do setting practice. Like, I was just giving her. And honestly, you inspired me, because I'm like, okay, there's other ways to get our reps in, or I'd serve. And I remember one time we were in a really big gym, but I was just like serving to the wall on the other side. And Doug's like, Claire, it's too loud. You got to keep it down. You got to do something else. Like, it was like bugging him. So I'm like, okay, fine. Like, and I wasn't trying to get his attention. I was like, I'm just going to get my reps in when I can. But 2 months in, he cut me. And that, I remember it was after a practice where, like, I don't think I'd gotten into a single drill, and like warm ups, like, he almost was like, no, like, there's too many people on the court. It was awkward. And so after practice, I was like, I want to like talk to you about attainable goals this year. Like, where should I see my role and what is realistic? I was like, yeah, let's set up a meeting, Doug. And he's like, well, why don't we just meet right now? Like, in the gym, right after practice. And he sat me down and he's like, there's too many people on this team and I can't even find a spot for you on the court. So he's like, I can't have you come into practice anymore. Like, there's no space for you on this team. And I was devastated. Like, immediately started crying. Like, I was trying to hold them back because I'm feeling shame in that moment. And he said that I could join the junior team, which was kind of a glorified club team. Like, it's not the same. And he was like, also, like, I know how much the team means to you. Why don't you, he's like, if you want, you can kind of be a team manager and write some newsletters that we send to, you know, alumni or parents. It was like, just such a shitty moment.
Totally.
Yeah. Because wow. I like worked really hard to try to get back on that team.
Right.
And it's midway through the season. Like, it's October. So it doesn't even give me an option to go to another university too, which right. I would have, you know, maybe Diane Scott wants me. Like, who knows, right? I don't know. There's other options. So mm-hmm. I was also, I don't know why, but I was really ashamed mm-hmm. of getting cut, because I felt like I was a pretty big part of student athlete life on campus too. And I'm like, okay, I'm not even an athlete anymore. Like,
right.
Am I going to be invited to the student athlete parties and stuff? Like, it's so much of your identity. And when I went down to the team room after practice, like, our meeting was only 15, maybe 10 minutes. I was really trying to hold back tears and I didn't tell anybody what happened.
Wow.
Like, and that's where I mean, I was ashamed. I didn't tell my teammates. Like, and it's not like I packed up, because he's like, you can still be on the team and write a newsletter. And he was kind of like, you know what, maybe you can practice twice a week, but just off to the side. Like, it was so awkward. It was not a great communication talk.
Yeah.
So I just didn't tell people. But then I think I told like one teammate, I'm like, oh, I'm only allowed to practice twice a week and I'm going to go join the JV team. And she's like, okay, that's kind of weird, but it's not like I told anybody I got cut.
Right.
Like, I don't have an explanation for it, Michelle. Like, mm-hmm. I look back and I think it was such an identity crisis.
Yeah.
Because I had been defined myself as a volleyball player up to that point, mm-hmm. that I didn't know how to redefine myself. So I was like, well, if I don't tell people, they won't know.
Yeah. And then I can still be me. I can still be who I am or who I see myself as.
Yes.
So I'm dying to know. So, I mean, what was the next day even like, or, you know, how did this continue? How did you even, you know, ever make your way back to the place where you played?
So it was really dark. Like, I don't know if I was depressed, because that's like, a clinical diagnosis, but I was really, really low. Mm-hmm. And then also that same week, like, I'd been dating this guy from the football team and he broke up with me. And
so, oh my,
it was like such a crappy, like, college week. Right.
Wow.
And so my parents, I remember I called my parents and they like knew I was having a tough time because I could kind of not speak. Like I was just having a tough time, you know? And my dad flew out to Vancouver just to like, he was like, hey, let's go to the library together and I'll just make sure you like do your notes and stuff. Like he was so cute, or like took me for coffee. Like he just spent like 2 or 3 days there just making sure I was okay.
I love that.
And that showed, like how important supportive family is, right?
Yeah, for sure. No question.
Yeah. And then, because I wasn't really given access to our sports psychologist, like they kind of, I think Doug was like, you can't be, we would have team sessions with our sports psychologist where we'd all be in there together. But he's like, you're not in there anymore. But I still had access one-on-one to our sports psych. And she knew how tough it was for me. And she actually recommended that there was this new like group therapy session for people who might be experiencing depression at UBC. And it was like, this is back in 2005. So mental health wasn't something we spoke about a lot. It was a very different time then. Like Bell Let's Talk didn't exist, you know, it wasn't out in the open. So I actually joined this group therapy where there was only about 5 or 6 of us and everybody had a different story. We kept each other secret. Like it was like, if you see each other on campus, you don't need to say hi to each other because you don't have to talk about the fact that we're all doing this group counseling together. But in the group counseling, there'd be the counselor who would lead us through. And it was all about like, don't put too much on your plate. Like if you need to just set one goal, like don't set 7 goals today. And maybe that one goal is just like read a chapter from your textbook. But I really got a lot of benefit from that. And I could do it on my own without the team knowing. And also I put a lot more emphasis on my schoolwork because I defined myself so much by volleyball that I was like, you know what, let's just really focus on academics because they'd slipped. And no matter what, you know that sports is going to end in life. It's not like we're going to get massive NHL style contracts that we can live off of forever. So I'm like, no matter what, I'm going to have to make money somewhere else. So I kind of dug into my schoolwork to sort of give myself something else to focus on rather than volleyball.
And good for you for pouring yourself into that. So, you know what, isn't it interesting, the secrecy behind that group for you guys? Not that, you know, right? Like there was just that little bit of like, well, I don't really want anyone to know that I'm getting help. And the weakness that was so attached to getting help for yourself mentally. Thankfully, it's changed a lot. I'm 100%. I think we still fight some of that stigma, though, I think. I think it's still a little bit tough to say. Oh, it's harder to say I'm hurting inside than to say my knee's hurting. It's just harder.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But now I actually think it's kind of cool to be like, oh, I saw my therapist. I go to therapy.
Yeah.
And I honestly think it's changed because I think now we're like, oh, yeah, like they're vulnerable and strong enough to admit that they go to therapy and that, well, we go to the gym to keep our bodies healthy. Why wouldn't we go to a therapist to keep our minds healthy? And I think that we've really changed that. And this has been on almost 20 years since my experience, but like what a great place we've gotten to in society.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And you don't have to be broken to go to a therapist. You might just want to, add to your mental ability and your mental wellness. You just want to keep well, right? To maintain. Yeah. And I think that's so massive. So you go to this group, you're sort of finding your bearings. You've focused on schoolwork. Maybe things are turning around, you know, or how did it, you know, where did your path go from there?
So I joined the JV team and, you know, became friends with them too. But I would still kind of show up at the senior, like the UBC varsity team practice because they were still my friends. And eventually people figured out what was happening, right? Like that I'd been cut.
Right.
So I never, ever really came out and said it. It was so weird. But at the end of the year, there's at that point in U Sports, there was this U20 team that would compete after the national championships at the end of April, beginning of May. And it was really an opportunity for all those younger players on the team who ride the pine, you know, don't get the reps, to then have a tournament where they're actually starters. And I don't know if that still exists, but at the time it was so awesome. So when I joined the JV team, I actually got an ankle injury in a game. I can't remember, practice or something. It was awful. But then I couldn't jump for a bit. So I was starting to get passing reps. And then when that U20 team came around, Doug was like, you can absolutely take part in this. But since I'd been recovering from an ankle injury, but also because that team had a lot of outside hitters and middles, he's like, I want you to play libero on that team. And I was like, okay, I don't like Michelle. I didn't care what position I played. I just wanted to be on the team.
Totally.
Like it's, I just want to be on the court contributing.
Yep.
So I was like, yeah, I've never played libero, but let's do it. And I loved it. It was perfect for my personality. I'm a chatterbox. Like, you know, I'm like, okay, I got this seam, like calling out, okay, you got line, you got cross. Like, you know, you're really a communicator. And so I love that. And I did really well. And also I didn't have to jump, right?
Yeah.
Like I got an awful vertical. Didn't have to, that doesn't play into being a libero. So let's go.
Plus and, you're 6 feet tall. So your arm reach. Length is like, yeah, your reach is a real huge advantage if you can move well enough. And obviously you could.
Yeah. And you get that as a volleyball player. So yes. There was weird advantages to being a tall libero. Because also at that point, it was most liberos were short because they never had a chance to be power hitters. But that doesn't mean a tall person can't be a libero. So summer comes and goes. And at that point, I wasn't really focusing on any position. I was just trying to stay strong, like do the same workout program. Mm-hmm. And then in my third year, I made the team once again as a red shirt, but libero, because he's like, hey, if you come in and play libero, this is kind of where you could possibly have a spot. And midway through that season in my third year, again, now I'm back on the team, but sure. Like red shirt, not traveling. But midway through that season, we actually had like in one practice, it was nuts. Two middles go down with ankle injuries and our right side. Like it was like, holy crap. All of a sudden there's three injuries on the team. And Doug's like, Claire, you're versatile because you've played middle, you've played outside and you play libero. So I'm now going to start traveling you. And I didn't start, but he would put me in games for like a middle sub. And then he put me in for a right side sub. And then he put me into back row pass. And I'm like, holy, this couldn't have worked out better. Like I was a utility player. And it was the best ever. And the first time I got in was as a middle blocker. And I was really good at steps. Okay. Like that was my bread and butter. And my setter like set me up for this step. And I like absolutely destroyed this ball. And the whole team was so pumped for me because they knew what I'd been through these past 2.5 years. Wow. And to get in and like get a kill on my first set was like so I remember that play. We were playing against Simon Fraser University in their gym. And like, I remember exactly like the way it went. And oh, it was honestly one of the best moments of my life because of everything that had built up to that. And then like, I stayed utility player for the end of that third year. But then when it came to my fourth year, I was the starting libero. That was, I earned that spot. And then libero was just the way I went.
Libero was the way you went and it went super well. I mean, we're talking, you had a lot of accolades in your time at UBC.
Yeah. And my fourth year, which is technically my second year of eligibility because I didn't touch the floor in my first year, second year I'm cut, third year is the first time you get in. So technically my third year at UBC is my first year of eligibility. But yeah, in my second year of eligibility, first as a starter, fourth at UBC, it's like math here, we win nationals for the first time in 30 years. And it was crazy. We like that team, we were fighters. And it's funny because I just covered the Grey Cup, Montreal beating the Bombers. And we felt like that Montreal team. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. we believed in ourselves. And I won't lie. I think we did have some doubt at certain points in the year. We were like, we're good, but wait, can we do it? Because putting it together on the biggest stage when there's so much pressure and everybody's like raising their level is so hard. Like winning the first championship when no team or no player on your team has the experience.
Yeah.
Is really challenging, but it was in Fredericton and we were really committed and we had that belief. And there were some games where we thought we were down and out. I remember we played the University of Alberta in the semifinal and we were down two sets. And in the third set, we were down like 21-18. We thought we were just going to get blown out, but then we came back, won that third set, destroyed the fourth set. Like we won 25-12. And then the fifth set, once again, we were down, I think 12-4.
Oh,
and
my
then came
word.
Back and won. Like it was crazy. And then when we won that semifinal, we're like, we can honestly do anything. And
yes.
Then we won the final in five sets, 2018 in the fifth.
Oh,
it was so close. Like it was just, It was an amazing season. And then we went on to win six in a row.
Yeah, exactly. And then you didn't stop winning.
I remember we had our setter off the bench. Her name was Katie Tysik. And she would come in and she had this wicked serve. And when we subbed her in, we knew that her serve was going to put us in really good positions to get Alberta out of system. And she, like, I think she got an ace. And then all of a sudden, the power hitter for Alberta, Jocelyn Blair, I adore her. She starts crying in the middle of the game because she knew, like, they in the fifth set, like when they'd been up by so much and then we just clawed back, like she knew their team at this point was tanking and that we had the momentum.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just like, you're like, you can't get out of it. And when I saw her crying, I'm like, we've got this.
Yeah. Okay. So, national championships galore after that. Well, I guess for you, you had what, three more to win or?
I won three. So that was my first of three. And okay, wait, one more thing, Michelle, because this is full circle again. We were incredibly nervous before the national final. Okay. And everybody says, and this is where I can relate to players. You know, when I'm talking to the Blue Bombers before, when I'm talking to the Alouettes before, I'm like, I know what it feels like to play in a big championship game. And you, yeah, of course you want to treat it like any other game. You say that, but you can't. No, okay. You can't. Like, the nerves are there. You know, it's everything's on the line. It comes down to this one moment. We were so nervous before that game. And I remember my teammate, Lauren Whitehead, she comes into our room and Lauren was a bench player at that time. And my roommate, Kyla Ritchie, and I were just like trying to focus, but like also trying not to focus and trying to eat, but you can't eat because you're like so nervous. And she's like, you guys, come watch this YouTube video. And it was this Harry Potter Puppet Pals. I don't know if you remember this story or this song. It was like, Snape, Snape, Severus Snape, Dumbledore. And it was this corny video. But we just giggled and we just, you know, melted into like just laughing. And that took so much pressure off. But this past weekend, I get nervous before covering a Grey Cup game. Because there's a lot of pressure on you as a reporter. And I was like, I always feel before these big games like I did as an athlete. Because you've put the preparation in, but everything's unpredictable. You don't know how a game's going to go, who you're going to interview. You just have to adapt on the fly. So you're going through nerves. And I actually was like, oh, Claire, you just got to chill out. And I was like, I'm going to play Harry Potter Puppet Pals. So I put the YouTube video on. It's like, anyways, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, I can't believe I'm playing this video right now to just like loosen up.
That's great. That's actually great sports psychology, you know, get yourself in that same zone as you did when you won that national championship. I tell you. And that will work for you over and over again. I just love this. So, okay. So you have national champion under your belt and you won a lot of individual awards too. I mean, you really became a strong force behind a lot of those wins, didn't you?
Yeah. And it's cool. Like, I really do think it's all about the team because holy moly, we had great blockers on UBC. And when they block, it's so easy for me to dig behind them because I can like see the window seam. You know, like we're honestly just a product of our teammates. Mm-hmm. And they made it easy because we'd have strong attacks, so we wouldn't get the ball hit that hard back at us. And, you know, good communication on passing. Like it's kind of cool to get those individual accolades because honestly, I just put them on a resume and it makes me look a little like shinier. But at the moment, the most important things were winning the national championship.
Yeah. And doing that together as a team. Now, that wasn't the end of your volleyball career, though. I mean, it took you to the national team and all of that. So, you know, share that story. You know, where did that go from there? Did you kind of know you were headed that way? What, you know, how was that playing out for you at that time?
Well, I mentioned that a goal when I was really young was to be an Olympian. And I forgot about that at UBC through those first years, through those like dark times, because
no kidding.
I'm not even making my university team. Like what? There's no chance I'm going to make a national team. Right. But then for the first time, it was kind of like this, that idea that had been so pushed down in my soul kind of reawakened. I'm like, oh my gosh, wait. Like, and that first year that we won nationals, the head coach for the national team at the time, Miyashita, Mia, we called him.
Yeah.
He was watching and ID'd me to come try out. And it's so crazy to think this, but it was never on my radar that I would be ID'd for the national team. So I'd made plans that summer. UBC was actually, our volleyball team was doing a trip to China to play some exhibition matches, which was really cool. But then because I was over in China, my sister was going to join me and we're going to do some backpacking. And so then we'd already booked our flights because you got to book flights for China in advance back then. So when he ID'd me for the team, I was like, oh my gosh, like, do I cancel on my sister and this trip? And I don't know if I was like, oh, like maybe I'm not going to make it. I remember talking to Doug and our assistant coach, Jesse Knight. And I'm like, what should I do? Should I go to the tryouts? And they're like, honestly, Claire, like sometimes the first year you're invited, it's just so they can kind of get to know you. But like, it's probably a long shot. So I didn't go. I didn't go to Canada tryouts because, and I kind of regret that, Michelle, mm-hmm. but I also don't regret spending that time with my sister in China.
Right.
But in hindsight, if I had gone that year, it would have given me more confidence the next year. So right. I got invited again the next year. And now it was a new coach, Lupo, Arndt Ludwig, but we call him Lupo, who's now the coach of the University of Manitoba Bison's men's team. But I think he came into that and looked a lot at the previous players who had been on the national team. And he selected me. I made the team, mm-hmm. but because I didn't have the experience of being on the team, I think he just kind of counted that against some of us. So, and I have a feeling I actually would have made it with the previous coach, Mia, knowing the experience of some of my teammates, because it was an Olympic year, but like the actual Olympics were in Beijing, China, but he was taking a younger squad because Team Canada hadn't qualified. So I actually think I would have made it. So I've always, like, in life, I don't have very many regrets, but that's a big what if.
Sure.
Because I was always sort of behind the eight ball with Team Canada. I was only a starter at one event as a libero, and I was kind of behind some other players, and I don't know if things would have turned out differently, but yeah.
How long did you stay with Team Canada?
So my first year that I made it was 2009, and my last year was 2013. And you know what? Like, I'll be honest, kind of mixed experiences with the national team. I always felt like we weren't like a really tight team at some points.
Yeah.
And because some girls are playing pro in Europe, some are in their early 30s, some are babies out of university, some, and like we're all experiencing a lot of different life like moments. And so sometimes it's hard to relate across the board. And I enjoyed all of my teammates, but because you come in and you don't have a lot of time to bond with one another and you're just off to your first event, it was harder to create like that really nice chemistry that you want on a team.
Well, absolutely. And when you're Canada playing against the world, some of that chemistry is what's going to actually give you a chance, right? It's an interesting, that would be a whole other conversation we could have on, you know, what's the best way to do that internationally for a national team where, you know, you sort of need to compete during the year with some of the best in the world in those professional leagues, and that helps you in a way to raise the level of our play here in Canada. And yet, how do we come together and literally play as a team, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that strong leadership is required. And also I think the coaches might have been able to do more to facilitate that.
Okay. So you retire from the game in 2013. And of course, now we're seeing you on TV. There's a whole lot of journey in that story for you as well. When did you start thinking about being in broadcasting? And was that a dream for a while too?
So I actually started thinking about it when I was like pretty young. I'd play. So my dad actually was a CBC. He was with CBC Radio for a long time. And I would kind of play around with his microphone gear and like tape myself being like a DJ with this like cassette recorder and things like that. But that was more just for fun. But then when I was at UBC, I really tried to get involved with the radio station CITR. Really hard to juggle with volleyball and being a full-time student, but I would occasionally do some color commentary. Sometimes I would do, I did a couple little radio pieces where I might interview some other athletes, which was fun. But where it really turned was when we won our first national championship in 2008. I remember we got back to campus and I got the student newspaper and I was really excited to see the story that had been written up on us. And first of all, the front page was the men's basketball team for winning what I would consider an insignificant game. It was like regular season. We had just won the first national championship for UBC in 30 years for women's volleyball. And flipping through it, we were this small picture on page like 7. Right. And I was pissed.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, what? Like, we just won nationals. Like, why aren't we getting more coverage? Why aren't we, like, if you're putting sports on the paper, like, we should be the headline. And that really bugged me. And I started doing some writing for the student newspaper at UBC about just female and male athletes of the week, because I wrote them a letter actually with my disappointment in the coverage, and they printed that in their editorial section, which I thought was cool. But they also reached out to me. They're like, well, we're a student run newspaper. Would you like to maybe write for us? And so I was like, okay, that's cool. Really cool that, you know, they're not, it wasn't a push and shove. They're like, okay, we understand that maybe we just need to have some more diversity because women think about this stuff because we're the ones not being represented. And so that was the beginning of it. And then when I was in Winnipeg with Team Canada, I'd be so ticked at the lack of coverage we got. And this was before the Winnipeg Jets were in Winnipeg. So we were only really competing against the Blue Bombers in the summer. And I'm like, we're the women's national team. Why aren't there more reporters out at least covering some of our, like, who makes the team after tryouts? Or right. Who's going to be going to Norseca's this year? Who's going to be representing Canada at the Pan Am Cup? Like, I hated it. And at the time, video blogging was becoming a bit of a thing. YouTube was gaining more traction. So in one of the years, I think it was when I was spending the whole winter in Winnipeg for a full-time training center, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do some video blogging with our team. And so I do like a day in the life.
Yeah.
Or I'd say, okay, like, here's what it's like walking from our gym to the grotto, you know, like just little things like that. And I had a lot of fun with it. And then I also pitched this idea to both the University of Manitoba and Winnipeg, because Winnipeg is a very unique market in that there's two universities in a relatively small city. Mm-hmm. And at the time with Canada West coverage, like, it was so basic. So for a hockey game, they would pretty much just put a camcorder on the rink, have a commentator, and then like move the camcorder and stream it. But then there'd be no mid-game interviews. There'd be no extra information about the players. So I went to both universities separately to their marketing people. And I said, I'm interested in broadcasting. Can I do some interviews? Maybe it's even in the week leading up to the game. And we just insert them into the broadcast. And I pitched this and they're like, we'd love that. And I didn't want to get paid. I just wanted to get reps in.
Yeah.
So I started doing that. And the University of Winnipeg was cool with it too. And so that's where it really began. But My major motivation was like, we got to get women more coverage because here I am representing our country and we're not getting what we need.
You know what I love? I love how you said getting your reps in. It's exactly, you're paralleling really, you know, what you learned in sport, right? Like, how do you get better at something? You do it a lot. And, you know, way to go for getting in there and saying, hey, I think we should do this and I'll do it, right? Instead of complaining and then waiting for someone else to do it.
Yeah. But like, selfishly, I wanted to be the ones doing it. Yeah. I'm like, I can start getting practice in a really casual environment where if I make mistakes, it's not going to be a big deal. And like, also because of the full-time training center schedule with volleyball in Winnipeg, like we had some decent chunks of time off and like, we were kind of bored. It's Winnipeg in the winter. It's minus 30 outside. Like, this is a great side hustle.
So there you are. There, you're learning, you're growing in exactly this craft, in the art of broadcasting. You're figuring it out. So, you know, what were the next steps for you? Like, did you go after something else or lead us, you know, to your next step in broadcasting?
Well, this is where it's tough because when you're a full-time athlete, you're really focused on that. And I didn't want to take too much of my focus away from volleyball, but at the same time, I wanted to prepare for life after volleyball. Mm-hmm. And I'd been through that identity crisis at UBC with volleyball where I'd been cut. And so I was like, I don't want to deal with that again when volleyball ends. So when we didn't qualify for the 2012 London Olympics, we had had at one point leading up to those Olympic games, the COC had come to Winnipeg for this like luncheon where all of the Canadian sport athletes in Winnipeg attended. So players like Desiree Scott from the women's soccer team, she was there. Or I think maybe Jennifer Jones and her rink, they were there. Our volleyball team was there. And I actually called out the chief marketing officer. His name is Derek Kent. And I'm like, you guys have done nothing on our volleyball team leading up to these Olympics. Like, where's our coverage, whatever? And he's like, well, first of all, you guys haven't qualified yet. And he's like, we only have a certain amount of resources. But he's like, if you guys qualify, we'll come out and we'll do a big story. But his message was sort of like, you're not good enough to deserve the coverage yet, because we, and I think about it now, and he's right. There's so many teams. And if they don't qualify for the Olympics, you got to put your resources into the athletes who are maybe going to go and medal. It's unfortunate. You just don't have enough resources. But at least I'd made a connection with him and he gave me his card. So then, unfortunately, when we didn't qualify, I still reached out to him. And I'm like, hey, is there any roles that you have in London? Because I still want to go to the Olympics. Like, I still visualized myself there. And he was like, okay, send me your resume. And on that resume were those little, let's call it rinky-dink interviews I'd been doing for Canada West. And I couldn't even provide them. Like, I just said that I'd been doing them, that I'd done a bit of writing for UBC. Because at this point, you don't have much on your resume when you're an athlete. And he's like, you know what? It would be really cool to have an athlete do some interviews with our athletes in London for that perspective. So he's like, you know what? Why don't you come out and you can do this content creation? But it wasn't called, you know, now there's all these like content managers or social media managers. Like, this was the first Olympics where Twitter was really a thing. Instagram was hardly, it barely existed. Wow. So I got to go to the Olympics and I remember crying in the car when he was like, yeah, you know what? We'll have you in London. You can do these interviews with athletes. So I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like kind of a dream job,
right?
Like, I get to cover the Olympics, but for the Canadian Olympic Committee. So I'm going to get so much access to all these crazy athletes. And that was huge. So I went to London, but also for networking, because the amount of media that's at Olympic Games is big. And I remember my first interview was with Katrina Lemaidon, who wasn't competing there, but it was just to talk about the Olympic spirit, the like what athletes might be thinking. I got to interview, Adam Vancouverden, who was canoe kayak, the women's rowing team, which got a silver, the men's rowing team that got a silver. Like, it was crazy. It was such an amazing job. So, and I had these awful cards made out, like, where it was just my name, my email address, and my Twitter handle, because I didn't think phone numbers were cool back then. And I was just like handing those out to people. But I got to meet a lot of people, Michelle. And one of them, who is a friend now, but was really helpful in mentoring me, was Jay Onright.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what a fun guy.
So fun. Oh. And he used to be a volleyball player at the University of Alberta. So we had like that volleyball connection. And he knew he could see me like doing little interviews places. So he knew I was into it. And yeah, he was like somebody that I would just email occasionally for little tidbits of advice, but I don't want to bug him too much. But yeah. And all these little connections are so important, because you just keep building them. You can get advice. But yeah, that was huge, going to those London Olympics.
Yeah. London Olympics. What a start for you in a lot of ways. And how did you move forward? You know, did you have a job on the side and then you were pursuing this elsewhere? And what was life like for you then?
Well, after London, I actually went and played pro in Belgium, because I wasn't done with Team Canada. So I'm still focused on volleyball, but I'm still thinking about like that seed's been planted for me. And I know I'm interested in broadcasting and want to pursue that. So then I have one more year with Team Canada. And actually in my last year, I was let go because they had the FISU games. So they needed a libero from a university and then a libero for the senior team. They didn't choose me as a senior team libero, and I didn't qualify as a FISU games libero anymore. So I get cut, but I wasn't okay with it. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm okay to move on, you know, like, let's go. I'm going to pursue something else in life.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, part of my motivation was, I think at the time I was 26, and I'm like, if I play four more years of volleyball, I'm going to be getting into broadcasting when I'm 30. And this shouldn't be a mindset, but as women in broadcasting at the time, it felt like, oh, I hate this. It felt like there's this shelf life and women are supposed to be young and cute. And you don't see a lot of, and I hope we can change this, but you don't see a lot of like older women sports broadcasters. You see so many men older broadcasting. Yes. So I was so scared. I'm like, I don't want to be starting this industry when I'm 30 and then only like breaking out when I'm a little older. And anyways, it's just such an awkward thing. And hopefully we can change that. But
yeah,
So I was like, okay, 26, like, let's go. So anyways, I get cut from the national team. And then honestly, it was like the same day, Jay Onwright and Dan O'Toole announced they're leaving TSN to go join Fox Sports. Yeah. And I'm like, I just sent this as a joke, but kind of serious to Jay Onwright. And I'm like, congrats on going to LA. Now you're leaving TSN. That's got to leave a job opening. Who's going to take your job? Because I'll take it. Like, I'm finished volleyball now. So bold, right? Like, of course, I'm not going to get his job at TSN. But he's like, hey, that sucks that you've been cut from Team Canada. While I don't doubt, and I still have this message, while I don't doubt that one day you might work at TSN, let's talk about the path there. And he's like, there was a job that's just opening at CTV Regina. He's like, I don't know if you'll have enough background to get that job, but he's like, maybe apply. And if that doesn't work out, he's like, I would recommend volunteering for Shaw TV, a local broadcasting, like a very local coverage in Calgary. He's like, you might be able to, you know, get enough experience there to get a demo tape. Because I really didn't want to go back to school, Michelle. I'd done an undergrad, I got a master's, and I didn't want to honestly waste another 2 years getting a diploma when I was like, I think I can just try to get right in.
Yep.
So I volunteered, like, honestly, it was like the second day I got back to Calgary after being cut from Team Canada. And I walked into Shaw TV and I'm like, what do you guys have here that I can do? Can I shadow reporters? Can I pitch a show? And they're like, well, we need X amount of Canadian content. So why don't you start by shadowing some reporters, but like pitch us something. And that was the year now leading up to the Sochi Olympics. And Calgary is a hub of Winter Olympic athletes. Why don't I do a show called Road to Russia? And I'm going to interview a bunch of Winter Olympic athletes and talk about their stories leading up to Russia. And so I did my own degree in broadcasting by just volunteering and learning on the fly.
Amazing. But this shows people, shows all of us that, you know, I think a lot of young people these days, they want to just land somewhere and get paid a lot for it. You know, well, aren't I entitled to this? If I'm doing the work, I should get the money. And yet it stunts them in their paths because that's just not how it works. It's not really, it isn't how it works. And so you were willing to do this for nothing monetarily, but for everything in experience and, you know, in learning the craft again and getting the reps again in an interest industry that you really wanted to excel at. So Road to Russia, what a great idea. And again, an athlete interviewing athletes made perfect sense. So that obviously was a success. And what happened from there?
Well, and I want to go back to one thing you said too. I actually, if you want to get into this industry and just like land at the top and make a bunch of money at the beginning, like that's not very gratifying.
No.
And I just want to say, like, going through all of this has made me so much more appreciative and also has given me some street credit because people are like, oh, wow, she worked from the bottom with no connections to the top. Like she did it all herself. It's not like I had an uncle or a parent who's working with Bell Media. You know, like I feel so satisfied in my journey because I hustled and I know I've earned every step of this. And that is something that I'm like really proud of when I'm on the sidelines for the Grey Cup. Because I'm like, hey, I remember when I was interviewing that quarterback for the high school team in Lloydminster, Saskatchewan. Like seriously.
Seriously.
And like that to me, I'm like, yes. And there's not much of a difference between those two interviews. They're the same. It's just, it's like you're playing volleyball for your high school team. And then it's like you're playing for the national team. It's the same rules, same sport, just a lot more eyes. Anyways. Yeah. So, but yeah, Road to Russia, like airs in segments. It wasn't even about, honestly, it wasn't even about it airing. It was just about like doing the interviews, learning how to edit, learning what shots you need, learning how to cut an interview. Like all that stuff was so, so important. And I think you can still find it on YouTube. It was really cute. Eventually through Shaw TV, like they saw my determination and desire to get better. They would then say, oh, Claire, we've got this hockey tournament. Like the Esso Cup, I remember, was in Calgary. And that's AAA girls teams from across Canada competing. They're like, we need a sideline or a ringside reporter for the final. Will you do it? And like, here's $75 or something, you know, like just stuff like that. I'm like, 100% I'll do it. Nobody else wants to. I'm like, give me everything. So I would do these like little events or, and some of them weren't so little. Like there was this Western Canada baseball league. They've changed the name of it so many times, so I don't remember what it was called at the time, but it was the Okotoks Dogs, and they'd be competing against like Lethbridge in the summer. And they're like, hey, like, do you want to come do the sideline reporting for this baseball? And they're like, you're going to have to come to Lethbridge. I'm like, stay in a hotel in Lethbridge? Holy crap, I've made it big. Like, to me, I was like, you're covering my hotel in Lethbridge and I'm doing this? Like, those were huge events in my mind. Mm-hmm. And just everything was another step in getting better and more practice and more comfortable in front of the camera. And live TV is so hard to get experience at, because they don't trust you to do live TV until you've gotten reps, but you have to do it once to prove you can. Like, it's a vicious circle. So little things like this, I did some MMA coverage, not UFC, definitely not UFC. Like these like little fights, I swear, I call them bar fights in an octagon in Calgary. But eventually I got enough of reps that I got a demo tape, because I'd always make sure I tried to get some of my footage and I'd splice it together. And eventually I got enough that I could start sending it to stations when there was job openings and like, hey, you know, applying. And because if you don't have a demo tape, you can't prove that you've got the experience to get a full-time job. It's really tough. Mm-hmm. And that's where I try to, I don't know what your advice to young broadcasters is, but I'm like, just show up at high school events and even use your phone, because we didn't have cool phones back then. And just like record yourself interviewing an athlete afterwards. To me, that might be enough to get a demo tape, because you're showing the initiative. You've got something on paper, tweet it out, put it on Instagram. Like, this stuff might sound cringe, but I don't think you should think about that. Just get it out there and be bold.
That's really, really good advice. That is actually worth something. Okay. So we still need to get to TSN. We need to get to where you were on those sidelines at the Great Cup. Right? Like, yes. Something like, but how'd you get there? That was so cool.
Well, okay. So I get my first job at Lloydminster, and I was super pumped because I knew a lot of broadcasters had been through Lloyd, had started there. It was a station where the station manager, her name's Stacey Comer, she knows it's a stepping stone station. Like, people go there to then go work for CTV Calgary or wherever, right?
Right, right.
One piece of advice I have on this, because I got to know or got contacts for a couple of station managers in Alberta, and I set an alarm on my phone, so I still have it as a reminder. But every Wednesday at noon, I had a reminder that went off that was email station managers. And like, I would email them and say, hey, my name's Claire Hanna. I'm in broadcasting. I'm looking for a job. If you have any openings, like, please let me know. And I would do that. And I emailed Stacey Comer in Lloydminster every Wednesday. Sometimes I'd miss a Wednesday here or there because it was just felt like a lot of emails. But honestly, I emailed her every Wednesday for like 5 months.
Wow.
And it was a lot. And sometimes she didn't respond. And sometimes I'd just be like, hey, like, I just did this MMA event on the weekend, you know, like, because I just wanted these people to know that I really wanted the job. And then that summer, she emailed me. She's like, hey, Claire, we've got a sports job that's opened up here. I think you should apply.
Come on.
Yeah. And then I got the job. That persistence. And like, I'll kind of skip through here quickly. So I go to Lloydminster. Then I actually get poached by City Television in Edmonton to host what was called dinner television. It was like breakfast television, but from 5 to 7 at night. Amazing, because you don't have an alarm that goes off at 3 a.m. I host that for about a year, got laid off with the Rogers layoffs. Actually had a quick stint working on a volleyball film in Vancouver. It's called The Miracle Season. It was with Helen Hunt. It was really cool. But it was neat. I was kind of like a choreographer on that, which the timing was amazing because I'd been laid off. Again, bit of that like drop off, like getting cut from the volleyball team, trying to readjust, didn't know if I'd get back into sports broadcasting. So go work on that film, but also was emailing stations. Then I get a call from Global in Saskatoon, a sports reporter job's opening there. I apply, I get it. So I go to Saskatoon, then start networking with TSN people. This is where I now reached out through contacts to figure out who were the people at TSN who were doing hiring. And through a series of conversations, they actually called me and they're like, heads up, there's a role that's opening with CTV Regina. It's kind of the same as Global Saskatoon, But if you go to CTV or Gyna, your inner family, so CTV and TSN are both Bell Media. Okay. So you're in the family. And if you're good enough, and if we trust you, because you'll be in Regina covering the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, you might also get the TSN sideline job. So it wouldn't be working for TSN, but it would be like freelancing for them on top of my CTV job.
Right.
So that was the big turning point for getting my foot in the door with TSN. So yeah, go to Regina, do get that sideline job. And then the whole network seeing you, you know, every other week or maybe once a month when you're doing the TSN sidelines for the riders. So that was a big, big kind of breakthrough moment. And then a couple of years later, so I think I started with CTV Regina in 2018. And yeah, 3 years later, when a job opened up in Ottawa, they were like, you should apply. And I applied and I got it. So it was like, I mean, I know I glossed over from Lloydminster in 2014 until now, which is 2023, but there was a lot of different jobs and a lot of moving in broadcasting roles, which is sort of something you got to buckle up for and prepare if you want to work for the big networks. Like, there are avenues to go there right away, but again, I don't know if I recommend it because I feel so confident knowing how many interviews I've done in the past. And I'm like, I've screwed up a lot of times at the smaller stations and learned how to adapt by screwing up there, that I don't screw up a ton at TSN because I've made my errors. I know, oh crap, this curveball's being thrown. I know how to adapt.
I think this is just totally amazing. And so there you are. What was it like? What was it like being on the sidelines of the Grey Cup, the biggest sporting event? I mean, one of the biggest sporting events in Canada, in a Canadian sport, you know, and being called on in those moments to talk to the people, the athletes that are winning, talk to the athletes that are not winning.
Yeah. Ooh. Well, it was my second year in the sidelines. So this year was a bit more, I'll say, not, like last year was so enjoyable, but the nerves, you're really trying to control your nerves, right? So they take over a bit more. So this year they were already in control a little bit more, so I could be a bit more in the moment. But like during the game, you're really trying to pay attention to who's making big plays and keeping in the back of your mind, oh, okay, that was a big interception or that was a big touchdown. I might be interviewing that player. Let's remember some of their history. Oh, that person was cut at the beginning of the season. Like I might want to ask, you know, you're prepping as the game's going. And then also, okay, hold on. Who am I going to be interviewing at half? Who's been a big playmaker in the beginning? It's going to be Brady Oliveira. What has he told me during the week? You know, you're recounting some of this. And but then when you go live, like sometimes like I go in with a plan and then it's like, you know, I see this look on his face as he's coming up and I'm like, okay, maybe I'm just going to ask him about the look on his face. Like it goes so fast that you adapt. But after the game, like this is why I'm in this, like I feel so privileged, first of all, that I get to be the first person to talk to these athletes in what for some might be the biggest moment of their sporting career. And I get to be the one that talks to them first. And my big goal is just let's connect with their story and share as much of that to the audience as we can and really get them to display how they're feeling, how they got here, what went wrong that they fixed. And those are just really exciting moments. And I remember like I'm interviewing Cody Fajardo, who's the quarterback for the Alouettes, but in my periphery or like I'm looking at him, but I can like see things happening around and there's like one guy dropping to his knees in tears of happiness. And it's really tough because you want to be able to show the audience all of these little moments, but you've only got one camera that can be on at a given time. And so I just try to think to myself, like, how lucky am I that I'm witnessing all these little things going around, but then trying to also stay in the moment with Cody and get his quotes out. But I think I did about 3 or 4 post-game interviews because I'm going back and forth with Matthew Schinetti, who's the other sideline reporter, because we're going, you know, and then in my ear, like I'll be finishing the report with Cody Fajardo, the questions, and my producer's like, okay, last question. And then you're going to throw over to Matthew, who is with William Standback. And I'm like, okay, Matthew, over to you with William. And then I'm like now looking for the next player in the melee and like chaos of everybody who's hugging and you can't see numbers or you can't see faces or some guy's over there like crying with his parents. It's like awesome chaos. But then at one point my reporter's like, okay, Claire, that was your last interview. You're clear. Go to the Bombers hallway and get Mike O'Shea, the losing coach, because we get divided. I was on the Bombers all week. They were my team.
Okay.
And I still cover the Alouettes, but it's like, they're more my responsibility. I'm doing all the reports on the Bombers. And then I'm sharing with the other reporter, Matthew. We're exchanging stories so that we're both up to date, but you can't be sometimes in two places at once. So, and whichever team loses, it's that reporter that is assigned to do the losing interviews, which are like, you've just been in ecstasy with some athletes. And then it's a total 180 and yeah. You're going and you're waiting outside their dressing room. And like, what do you ask players and coaches in that moment? Because they're devastated. You want to ask them a bit about the game, but you don't want to rub too much salt in the wound, and you got to be empathetic. And I just interview Mike O'Shea, but at the same time, I see Zach Collaros walking out with tears in his eyes. And I deal with him a lot. What do you even say to an athlete in that moment? Like, because I'm also impartial. It's not like I'm sorry for him, but I feel for what he's feeling. So I just try to be empathetic in those moments and ask questions to still get their emotions out there. Or is there anything you regret? Or maybe why did you make that decision before the game? You know, one of the big stories was in this case, Adam Big Hill and Dalton Schoen playing. They were likely suffering from injuries. Was that a good decision? Do you think that was right? Like, I'm just asking from a place of curiosity. I'm not trying to paint somebody into a corner. We just really genuinely want the answers. But those are so tough. And Michelle, one of the hardest, I think it will probably for me go down as the hardest post-game interview I've ever done, is I was covering the FIFA Women's World Cup this summer in Australia. And I interviewed Christine Sinclair after their loss to Australia when the team was out, they'd underperformed. She'd had a tough tournament.
Yeah.
She was an athlete that it doesn't matter what sport you play, but like I idolized her as a volleyball player.
Absolutely.
Watching her play soccer, because she'd been such a role model since she was 18. And I remember thinking like, I want to be like Christine Sinclair, like, so you're kind of like one of your heroes is standing in front of you, but you're also a reporter and she's like devastated. And like, I also like want to be the one in that position to ask her questions, but those are so tough. Cause you're like, okay, this is a big moment. Is she retiring? She's crying. She's devastated. She's just had a really awful loss. Like that was so tough. And I remember I got a tip off actually from one of the security people who was like, hey, because there's so much happening at the end of the game and I've got to interview a couple other players. So you can't be watching what everybody's doing, but I'm trying to watch Christine, how she handling her teammates. I noticed her hugging every one of her teammates, which I don't think normally happened. But the security guy comes up to me. He's like, just want to let you know, I saw Christine Sinclair grab a blade of grass from the field. Don't know if that's significant or not. I didn't either. So I just asked her in the interview. I'm like, hey, I noticed you grabbed a blade of grass. Why did you do that? And she's like, oh, man. She's like, I just grabbed it because it might be my last World Cup. I don't know if I'll be back here. And like, then boom, here, you've got the information you need. Like, it was significant. It wasn't, just something she does. Anyways, these little observational moments, but that was like the toughest post-game interview I've ever done.
Yeah, I bet. But what an honor to, be in the company, right, of someone like Christine Sinclair and get to share those stories. And you got to do that because of all the work you did. Claire, what a story you have. What an incredible journey, how humble you are. And just every step of the way you have worked at what you are doing and you have earned where you have landed. And it seems to me you never forget where you are or where you've come from. And I think that's really cool. So the farther and farther you go, I know that will stay with you. What an amazing conversation this has been. I do have a few rapid fire questions.
Let's do it.
Okay.
And also an honor to I feel very privileged in my position, but I also feel honored to be interviewed by you because you are somebody whose story, I didn't know you were watching growing up because you were in Winnipeg and I was in Calgary, but also at that time, the women's national team, again, didn't get the coverage. There was no streaming. I couldn't watch you. I couldn't make you a hero of mine. But when I got to hear you speak, you were so inspiring. And I remember you playing the piano for one of your teammates who'd been cut, who hadn't made it. But hearing your stories was something, and I'm so serious, that I held on to. Because when I was in those low moments at UBC, I knew that other people had been there, but had still found a way to succeed on their own. And those are things I truly, like, that's a core memory, Michelle. And I think about it to this day.
Well, thank you. Wow, that touches me. That's really, really neat. Really neat. Years later, you know, you still meet people who, you know, I think people need to hear that. They need to hear that what you do, what you say, and how you conduct yourself, and the things you do when nobody's watching, really are so important, because you can share them later. And you are that to others, I am sure.
Our whole team was obsessed with you. And I know my setter in high school was a shorty, and she thought about you all the time. She's like, short setters can make it. So, and that's why these conversations are important, because maybe somebody now gets to resonate on my story like I resonated on yours, and it keeps going.
Okay. We have, this actually leads us right into my first rapid fire question, which I think is so cool. You're 100 years old. What is the story you most love to tell?
Holy moly. Maybe it isn't, I don't know. Maybe it hasn't happened yet.
Maybe not.
I'm going to say it's to be determined.
Who or what do you think people see when they see you? And is there something different you wish they would see?
They see my height. That's the first thing. And that's okay with me, but I wish they would just maybe see my personality a bit more at first.
I love it. What is something people would be surprised to know about you?
That I really prefer not to wear makeup at all times, because we wear so much in our industry that if I could just get away with going au naturel every day, I would do it.
Okay. What exhausts you?
Long work weeks with a lot of travel and not very much sleep.
So what energizes you?
Ooh, walking my dog and going for hikes and spending time outdoors.
Love it. What was a moment of intense joy that you've experienced in your life?
There's two, and we talked about them today. That first time I was ever substituted onto the court for UBC, and then winning our first national championship with UBC.
Amazing. And I will end with this. Who are two or three people who influenced you, and how did they impact your life?
Well, my parents, because they always supported me, even in the times when I maybe didn't believe in myself. They knew, they were, you know, they were there if this was my path. Okay, I'll say you, because of all the guest speaking, Michelle, like, really, we hadn't heard from many huge female athletes at that point, and it was really important to have that visual representation that we could do it. And also Sarah Orleski. She's a reporter in Winnipeg. And I didn't mention her in this, but she was one of those people that I got connected with. I probably only spoke to her once every 2 years when I was getting into broadcasting, but to see her being such a professional with TSN, cover so many events, ask incredible questions. She does so much research. She's got attention to detail, and she's just a really nice and cool person. She's somebody in this industry that I always looked up to. And I feel like, I'm like, oh my gosh, we're friends now. Like, I can't believe that. Holy moly. Like, I can text Sarah. We call each other. Like, it's, you know, I'm like, I can't get over the fangirl of that.
You do the same thing. Yeah. How neat is that?
I know. I don't see that as the same thing. Because I feel like she's just done like so much more. So I can't ever see myself in the same conversation as her. But yeah.
I love that. And that's part of what makes you as amazing as you are. Claire Hanna, thank you. Thank you for chatting, for sharing your story, just for being who you are. And I love that there were low moments, and yet you somehow found a way to keep on putting one foot in front of the other. And I think that was so important, and being willing to do stuff for nothing in return, except for you knowing that it was for a greater cause and you were going to be moving forward with what you were learning and what you were doing. I just think really, really incredible, and a great lessons for all of us to learn and just to be inspired by. So thank you for your time. You are totally a hero in our midst. We love watching you amongst all those big men on the sidelines of the CFL, and we look forward to seeing where we will see you next. So thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
And that is Claire Hanna, TSN sports broadcaster, and an unbelievable example of having a dream and doing whatever it takes to get there. And it sounds like the most exciting part of her journey is on its way yet. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today, Claire, and all the best, as we will literally be able to watch you shine in the future. If you liked Claire and her story, you will for sure enjoy the other heroes we have highlighted. I'm Michelle Sawatsky-Coop. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.